one of the red column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who slides? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 494. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, a little bit more of perspective on the Major League Baseball trade deadline that went down a few days ago. We'll share our thoughts on the Phillies again, just as we are now a couple of days away, and we've had a chance to watch Kyle Gibson pitch and Ian Kennedy and see how the team responded in Pittsburgh to Dave Dombrowski's moves at the deadline, and of course another series against the Washington Nationals this week, so we'll talk about all that coming up here in the next few minutes, and some of the around-the-league reaction to the Phillies' trades, and a couple other things here as we move along on the podcast. But joining me, as they do every week, my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Baseball Prospectus and The Dirty Inning and Continued Success and Absolutely Hammered on the Patreon with Chris Jones. You follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, pal?
I just want to make sure you guys know and the audience knows. I saw it reported today that according to Molson Coors Corporation, the following brands have been discontinued: Milwaukee's Best Premium, Mickey's Fine Malt Liquor, Henry Weinhardt's Private Reserve, Keystone Ice, Ham Special Light, Key Lightful, Ice House Edge, Magnum, Miller High Life Light, Steel Reserve 211, and Old English HG 8000. So if anyone is a religiously following those brands, it's just terrible. A dark day. A dark
day. Great-great-grandfathers drank those beers.
A dark day for college me as well.
Oh, man. The amount of malt liquor that I drank in college. Unwise. Oh,
boy. Can I also just point out, there was apparently an alcoholic beverage called Key Lightful.
I know.
All one word.
Wow.
I'm now upset that I didn't drink that. I need to know what that is.
It's got to be like a key lime flavored beer, maybe?
I thought it was like an offshoot of Keystone Light, but I guess that's an entirely
different company.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But who knows?
I don't know. I don't know. Anybody listening can experiment and let us know. But that's an important public service announcement, Justin. We thank you for sharing that with the listeners for sure. Yeah, I think it's important news. And Liz Rocher, of course, from Yahoo Sports and Continued Success and all the bonus stuff she does with Justin over on the Patreon. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
I'm great. I was in Philadelphia this weekend. I was in Philadelphia. We left the area to go to a wedding. Someone in my husband's family was getting married. And it was great. I pretended for like a day and a half that there was no COVID because I had to.
Yeah.
Because everyone at the, no one at the wedding wore a mask.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I am probably infected. It's exciting. But I'll be honest, it was worth it to be back in Philadelphia for just, it's been probably 2 years since I've been in the city itself. I got to go to Reading Terminal Market and, you know, we had a great view from our hotel room. And I went to a Wawa, and those are the things that I really wanted to do.
Well, Philadelphia, if you go by the Phillies, big supporters of COVID. So you were in the right place.
I was, and I do have to thank them for leaving town the moment I got in. Leaving town and promptly losing two games to the Pirates.
They gave you a chance.
You censured yourself there. I was good.
I did.
Yeah, no, you did. You caught yourself. Yeah, I want to get to the Pirates series in just a second here, but you know, with you haven't gotten a chance, Liz, as far as I know, to comment on the Phil's trade deadline moves. So I was wondering what you thought now that we're a couple days away from what Dave Dombrowski did at the trade deadline.
I mean, my Twitter account spoke pretty clearly, I would say. I wasn't impressed, really. I don't know what everyone was excited about, because if you look, if anyone was in fact excited,
the title of Liz's memoirs. I don't know what you were all excited about.
I'm stealing that. You're giving me that. It's just, you know, I'm really glad that what's his name, Gibson, Kyle Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Gibson. Yeah.
I wanted to call him Ty. I wanted to
Kirk
call him
Gibson.
Evan
had
Gibson.
A different. Yeah, different.
That's
thing.
That's not
yeah.
his name. No. I'm glad that he had a good start against the Pirates, the only one the Phillies really were able to benefit from. And Ian Kennedy was terrible in his first time out. He was not good. And, you know, it's just his first time. He'll have a chance to prove himself. But I just want to say, looking historically at their numbers, like, the precipice is somewhere. The drop-off is there. Mm-hmm. None of these guys have been... It's possible for them to figure it out at this point in their career that they've suddenly figured out how to be great. History says otherwise.
Most pitchers figure it out in their age 37 season, right?
Yeah.
That's generally speaking when it happens. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to get your reaction.
Yeah, I just wasn't impressed in general. And, you know, in retrospect, it was stupid to expect more.
Well, and maybe that was our fault. Maybe we were expecting too much.
No,
you know, we were expecting some creative Byron Buxton or Chris Bryant trade, and we should
see
have known better.
That started circulating, and I already chastised Chris for this, but I mostly blame him. I kind of feel like he started that wave on social media.
Did
about,
he?
Oh,
was that just him?
But people latched on. The idea, it just was submitted to the internet, and people latched onto it as though that was something. That was in the realm of possibility, but no one. You know what started it? It was one actual reporter saying
from John Heyman, yeah,
right, saying there's the Phillies are one of six or seven teams that like checked in on Byron Buxton,
yeah.
and we leapt to Byron Buxton, Josh Donaldson, and Kenta Maeda as the answer to the Phillies' problems. And yeah, you know, as any listeners of Absolutely Hammered and then of the subsequent Hit and Season John and I recorded that night are aware, I wasn't, you know, super into, I guess you could say, what the Phillies did. And I'm still not. I will say I woke up the following day, as is always the case, when the Phillies make any kind of move of any kind of significance, my reaction up front is typically extreme, followed by a night's sleep. Waking up the next day and feeling like, but do the people on the other side have a point? And I was letting that happen. I was letting that in a little bit, thinking like, all right, look, yeah. Kyle Gibson does improve the rotation. Yes. Ian Kennedy is a different person than has been in the bullpen to this point.
That's
Freddie Galvis.
Strategy.
Well, it was very nice to see Freddie Galvis in a Phillies uniform. Not that he was a part of any particularly special Phillies teams or is a particularly strong contributor. But still, you know, defense, I guess. You know, sure. The Phillies, but that's the thing. This is the problem. The Phillies get to say, well, we improved. They don't have to say, you know, they don't have to feel bad about how much or how little they actually improved. And it was very little. And, you know, we've been saying for weeks, like, oh, expect a Jason Vargas type deal because, you know, that's what the beat writers were saying. That's essentially what happened. Like, thrill-wise, that's basically the level we got.
Yeah.
So you can't really say the Phillies, like, led us astray here. They did exactly what we thought they were going to do. It just sucked because the Phillies suck. And the organization is you know, being very...
Sucky.
I was trying not to say sucky, but that is the word I'm going to use.
Perfectly good adjective.
Sucky. The trade with Spencer Howard is, you know, it wrinkles your nose hairs for the wrong reasons. Not particularly because I think any of the three of us treasured Spencer Howard in a serious way, but just because that was the trade he left in. And this was, he still had, from our perspective, he still had the shine of a top prospect in the organization. And I think, and I know we're going to talk about this, I think when you look at the national writers' perspectives on this, they don't have that. And I think that's the difference between our view and the various views we're going to talk about, is that we are down on the Phillies and we are down on Spencer Howard, but he still lives in our minds as one of two key prospects who are going to help this team move forward. And right now, one of them definitely won't, and the other one has been struggling to.
Yeah. Yeah, a few years ago, we had Sixto Sanchez and Spencer Howard in the pipeline, and the Phillies felt comfortable enough and excited enough about Spencer Howard to move Sixto Sanchez in the JT Realmuto trade. And Sanchez has been hurt. It's been exactly, you know, the Phillies might be proven right in moving on from Sixto Sanchez because he's been hurt, but to move Spencer Howard, who was an untouchable 1 year ago in this deal, was interesting. But, you know, Justin, you mentioned it. There have been some national folks who have come out and really love this trade from the Phillies' perspective. Baseball America graded all the different trade deadlines for the different teams and gave the Phillies a B+. They wrote, Dave Dombrowski built his Hall of Fame-worthy resume on winning trades and now has another lopsided deal he can add to his ledger. The Phillies fleeced the Rangers in the trade for right-handed pitchers Kyle Gibson, Ian Kennedy, and Hans Kraus, bringing them one of the best starters on the market, one of the top relievers on the market, and a power-armed pitching prospect at a shockingly low cost. Disappointing former top prospect Spencer Howard and two players who couldn't crack the top 30 in a very shallow Phillies farm system. The Phillies deadline would have been an A if they had completed the Tyler Anderson trade that fell through, but the Rangers trade alone makes it a successful deadline. And that kind of mirrored what Keith Law said.
I want some of what they're smoking, man. I don't know what that is. What is that?
Well, I think what you see is you see some folks who, like Justin was saying, they don't look at Spencer Howard the same way we do. They see a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy, a guy who can't maintain his velocity, a guy who probably is going to be a reliever during the course of his career. And I guess in Keith Law's case, you know, and in the case of these Baseball America writers, it certainly seems like they view Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy, and especially Hans Kraus. The remarks from Baseball America on Hans Kraus and from Keith Law were that this guy has a chance to actually be a pitcher in the starting rotation at some point in the near future. Like, this is not a nothing prospect. The Phillies actually got a good prospect back in along with Ian Kennedy and Kyle Gibson. So that's where some of the national writers are coming from, but it's not unanimous. Obviously, there's lots of folks who still view Spencer Howard in a different way and don't look at Kyle Gibson. They look at Kyle Gibson's ERAs throughout most of his career, with the exception of this year, and see a flawed pitcher, a ground ball guy who's going to be pitching in front of an infield defense that might be the worst in Major League Baseball. And, you know, that's why Justin and I were so critical of it, is because it just didn't feel like a real improvement. Fangraphs, for whatever it's worth, they redid their Zips projections, and the Phillies increased their playoff odds by 1.7% according to Zips, which is actually fourth best among major league teams. So some improvement there for sure, but again, not the sexy move that we were thinking. And, you know, I don't know. What do you guys make of those write-ups from Baseball America and from Keith Law on the Athletic Baseball Podcast?
I don't like them. I think they're
they are bad.
I believe they are bad. I mean, Fangraphs was definitely more muted in their praise. They recognized that it was a lot to give up for guys having career years. Mm-hmm. And a couple of prospect guys I'm friends with over at BP were even harsher.
Oh, look at Liz with the friends outside of these podcast people.
I've got friends in high places. Wow.
Yes, I won't name them. I mean, you can go to VP and see who I'm talking about. I'm not going to name them just because.
Baseball Prospectus, for the folks who may not know
baseball
what we're
prospectus,
abbreviating.
Because they're Mets fans. We don't want to say their names.
I trust those guys and their prospect evaluations more than pretty much anybody, which, I mean, everyone has their favorite guy, or at least a guy that they like, and I can't stand Keith Law and his evaluations. I'm just not a fan. So, I'm going to go with the people that confirm my feelings. That's what I'm going to do.
Law is famously low right now, the past few years, on the Phillies farm system. So this tracks that he thinks getting rid of a farm piece, even a high one, is a win for the Phillies to get back Major League ready pitching. Ranger Suarez just walked a leadoff batter.
we have to talk about him later.
But I'm the opposite of Liz. I'm at least momentarily encouraged when professional baseball looker adders contradict my opinion and say something like, actually, no, this is good. I'm like, that's great. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about why. I would love to be wrong when I'm saying something is wrong with the Phillies, or that they did something wrong. And, you know, I don't think they make a ton of invalid points here, but when you see something like the Phillies got, what was the baseball? Didn't a Baseball America, didn't they do a write-up where they said, Gibson and Kennedy were two of the best options on the market? And like stuff like that is just like, That's just objectively untrue. That's just wrong. Like, they were not two of the best options on the market. I will say, by the time I had started complaining about Kyle Gibson, I didn't even realize he had been an all-star this year. So I do feel like, you know, I spoke with my foot in my mouth a bit. But as Liz was saying, there's an ever closer precipice, it feels like, every day. And as John and I kind of discussed, nobody else seemed, apparently, reportedly, was in on these guys. So you can't tell me they were, like, the best options on the market if the Phillies were the only team that was like, hey, we'll trade this guy who can't stay healthy, who we jerked around a lot, for these two pitchers. As if, like, they pulled off some devious backroom genius move. Like, I'm just not seeing it. And when you're categorizing those two acquisitions in that way, I'm taking your analysis a little less seriously.
I think there are two different lenses that you look at trades at the trade deadline when you're rooting for a team that needs help. And the way Baseball America and Keith Law are looking at this trade is value for value, right? The Phillies got good value for what they gave up. The way we are looking at these trades is, did the Phillies do enough to catch them, to surpass the Mets? Did they do enough to improve the team really well? Because we don't really care that much about value at this point. When you look at the trade deadlines from recent seasons, when they got Esdrubal Cabrera, when they got all the relievers last year, when they got just, they didn't give up anything they'd missed. We haven't missed a single prospect that went in those deals. You could argue the Phillies, quote unquote, won those trades, or at the very least didn't lose them. Value for value, those trades were fine. But they didn't really help. They didn't really do what you are trying to do at the trade deadline, and that is acquire pieces that are going to put you in a much stronger position. The Phillies, are they in a stronger position now than they were 2 weeks ago? Yes, slightly. But it's not like going out and getting Jose Barrios and getting Chris Bryant, you know? And again, maybe it was foolish of us to think that they would even tread in those waters.
It was.
But they didn't. And So that's the difference, I think, in the evaluation of these trades.
Yeah, and I got to say that when it comes to did the Phillies make their team better, when that conversation comes along, which is, yes, John, you're right. That's the conversation that we're having, and that's the conversation that really should be had here. Because the Laws and the Baseball Americas of the world are considering projected success as real success. And we don't really do that here. But my point being that Kyle Gibson being in the rotation as the trade deadline comes and goes, like the announcement of that coming, it was kind of like being whispered that, like, oh, Kyle Gibson's going to be in the rotation. And then the latter part was, and Chase Anderson is also going to be in the rotation. And you're like, did we actually get better? Tough question.
That is a good point.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And that's with Zach Eflin being out, that they still have huge holes in the starting rotation here. And then getting Tyler Anderson in this case, if you'd have gotten Tyler Anderson and these guys, then you're not, at the very least, you're not worried about having Chase Anderson in the rotation, because the news this week, for those who haven't been following, is Vince Velasquez is out of the starting rotation, as is Matt Moore. And so they've moved Ranger Suarez, who was the closer for the last couple of weeks and had been performing very well in the bullpen. They moved him to the starting rotation, and he's getting the start as we speak right now, as we're recording on Monday night against the Washington Nationals. A controversial move. I know this is, as far as I can tell on Twitter, kind of a 50-50 split. I know that Ranger Suarez has always been a starting pitcher. He was moved to the bullpen last year out of necessity and has stayed there and seemed to find a very comfortable role there, but he wants to be a starting pitcher. The Phillies obviously need starters. They don't, you know, they have to use Ranger Suarez just so they can get Matt Moore and Vince Velasquez out of the starting rotation. They are in the position of just having to try something. And I'm not against moving Ranger Suarez. I know a lot of people are. I'm not against moving him to the starting rotation, because if it means no more Matt Moore and no more Vince Velasquez, I'm willing to try Ranger Suarez as a starting pitcher, because if Ranger Suarez can be a good starting pitcher, that's more valuable than having him in the bullpen. But I know that you guys may disagree with me on that. Liz, what do you think? Where are you on the Ranger Suarez move to the starting rotation?
I'm kind of two minds, because on the surface, in the Spencer Howardness of it all, I hate it, because he was doing really good in the bullpen. And they need starters, but they need a steady bullpen. That has been a problem. it's been a problem. It's enough of a problem that they got a dude and added him, and that he immediately allowed runs upon getting here. Like, it's... And for that reason, I hate it. But I do like it because Vince Velasquez and Matt Moore need to get out of the rotation. But at the same time, I hate that that's why he's being brought to the rotation. Because despite having a plethora, more starting pitchers than they have rotation spots for, they need to move someone from the bullpen to the rotation because that's how bad they are. Like, that it's come to this is one of my frustrations. Like, he may want to be a starting pitcher, and having him be a starting pitcher is valuable, but you have to look at what you need at the moment. And I think the bullpen is a huge problem. Not that the rotation is. It's like it's a there's no winning with there's no winning here. Everything is bad.
John, I mean this sincerely. I'm not asking facetiously. When you say Ranger Suarez could be more valuable as a starter, like if he's a starter, he's more valuable for the Phillies than as a reliever. What makes you think he will be more valuable as a starting pitcher?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know that he will be.
Just in case, if this is the time that it just clicks, yeah, that is more valuable. That's what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, he had shown in the minors that he could pitch pretty well as a starter. He's never gotten the opportunity to start on a regular basis in the major leagues. Now, he's being put, again, like Liz, like you mentioned, behind the eight ball here, and that he's got to build up his arm strength. He's got to build up his pitch count in August. Like, it's one thing if you start this process in April or May. It's another thing when you're starting it in August. That's asking a lot of a guy like Ranger Suarez, and it may be doomed to fail simply because you're asking it's a very tall ask here in this case. But I mean, if Ranger Suarez becomes a five inning guy for you at this point during the last 2 months of the season, and you can avoid the Matt Moore, Vince Velasquez disasters every 5 days, that then I think Ian Kennedy in the bullpen kind of slides into Ranger Suarez's place, and maybe, you know, Bailey Falter is supposed to come back from the injured list at some point soon as a left-handed option in the bullpen. I think that's kind of where the Phillies are seeing this. If Ranger Suarez, now I think the other thing too is Ranger Suarez's velocity popped as a reliever. It probably is going to come down a little bit in the starting rotation. So I'm not sure this is going to work, but at the same time, at this point, you know, if you want to, you're still just 3.5 games behind the Mets as you enter play here on Monday night. I think you have to take the shot that Ranger Suarez can start.
Well, I only ask because, you know, looking at Ranger Suarez's numbers, he's made 3 major league starts and he has a 6.75 ERA as a starter. He's got a 2.91 ERA as a reliever in 68 games. I think this is a case of somebody else in the Phillies organization. I think they have 3 starting pitchers and I think they have a bunch of long relievers. I don't know if that's indicative of just how baseball's going now, how guys are training, what's expected of you. There's going to be more bullpen games. There's going to be fewer starters going deep. Maybe a starter is a guy who can ideally go 5 instead of 7 innings. But even to your point about the minor leagues, the last time Ranger Suarez made a start was in 2019 in Lehigh Valley. He made 7 starts. He had a 5.68 ERA that year. So as far as Ranger Suarez being an option as a starter, history indicates not great, but like you said, he's 25 years old and he's a lefty. He's going to have value to a team as potentially a starter still. Pitchers are fluid. He's in his mind. He's in his mid-20s. He can still work, build up that arm strength and become a starter. But this is no answer for the present. Yeah. This is no solution. This is just another whirring blender at the back end of the rotation that isn't really going to do what you want it to do. It's just going to be different for now.
Exactly. You said it much better than I did. That's my big problem with it.
Yeah. And I think if Bailey Falter hadn't gone on the COVID-19 list, he would have been the guy to move in because he'd been a starter this year. But their hand was forced with Bailey Falter still probably a few weeks away from coming back and being able to contribute anything at the big league level here. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the winners and losers at the trade deadline outside of the Phillies and look at a couple of the teams that were selling at the trade deadline this year. That's coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's take a look at some of the potential winners and losers at the trade deadline. Which teams helped themselves the most? Which teams didn't do enough? And then I do want to talk a little bit about a couple of the teams that were selling off everything, including especially the Nationals and the Cubs. We'll get to them here in just a couple of minutes. But Justin, for you, which of the teams, and I think we may have all the same, we all may have the same answer, but give me like one or two teams that you thought improved themselves the most, were the big winners at the trade deadline this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think the Braves did a whole lot to like make themselves intimidating, but they did do a whole lot. And in a way, I kind of tip my cap to that. You acquire an entire outfield, and I know that that was like the fun way of describing that, but then they did, I believe, start all three of those guys, Jorge Soler, Adam Duvall, and Eddie Rosario in their outfield. You know, that's an entirely new outfield.
Yeah, it is.
And that's not a talentless outfield. That's the outfield of a team that's trying to buy back the wins that they lost when their MVP candidate was gone for the season. So I guess I've been watching the Phillies long enough to just respect that a team got aggressive at the trade deadline when faced with an unpredictable disaster for their season, a season where I certainly picked them to win the NL East and go to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They also acquired Richard Rodriguez, which was somebody on the Phillies radar, or so we were told, to help the bullpen. And I mean, you know, who isn't looking for bullpen help at any trade deadline? Rodriguez was one of the better options out there, and the Braves got him. So I really do tip my cap to the Braves, unfortunately. It feels gross, but like they did it. I'm also always just very entertained by the Blue Jays. You know, I always think less of them, but they seem to be in the mix, but they're always off to the side, just kind of like doing their own thing. I feel like often the Blue Jays are just acquiring guys who know like aren't a big part of the conversation, but who wind up contributing in serious ways. And that they're the team that got Barrios is awesome. Like that's great for them. They're still very much in the AL East picture. It's wild. Like they got Brad Hand from the Nationals. They got Barrios, who I've been looking at for years and would love to have seen him on the Phillies. Obviously, again, something we didn't think was going to happen. So I don't know. I was almost in a weird way. I'm always just kind of like a little proud of the Blue Jays because they get dealt a crap hand most of the time playing the division they're playing in. But they've got some really fun players now, and they made themselves a little better. And I do just have to add, you know, living right next to him, watching the Mets get Javi Baez, a guy that I know me and Liz love a lot. Now that he's going to be on the Mets and the Mets infield. And I said this to Chris the other night. Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor play up the middle for the New York Mets. Earlier this season, we watched Bryce Harper and Odubel Herrera collide and a fly ball landed between them. Like, these are the states of our franchises.
Fair enough. Liz, how about you? Winners from the trade deadline.
I think the Mets came away pretty well. It's just Javi Baez, and he's having a down year, but he is a wizard on defense. And I feel like being around his good friend, Francisco Lindor, is only going to help. Like, imagine how fun that team is going to be. That team seems like a ball to spend time with, honestly.
Yeah, they do.
They seem
like
a lot of fun. After the insanity of that afternoon, the Dodgers were somehow an afterthought.
Wild.
It was wild because that was the first thing to happen. And no one is really, like, I haven't seen any, like, big explainers on how in the world did they take that away from the Padres?
Even just now, I looked right past them. And I didn't intend to.
Yeah.
I just looked right past them. They got Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, for God's
and
sake.
And Matt, for four prospects, yes, but those are good guys. Those are they are very far over the luxury tax, and they do not care.
Nope.
They want to put together a team that's going to win. Oh, I almost said the Super Bowl for some reason. Win a World Series.
They could probably win the Super Bowl too with that.
Honestly,
they might as well make a shot. You know, like, they probably aren't going to win the World Series because they're playing against one of these cursed Giants teams that's just going to do it. So you might as well throw in on the Super Bowl at this point instead of the World Series.
Yeah.
I really think the Dodgers, they only get better. They only get better. They are dedicated to making their team better at literally any cost. And I respect that tremendously in a world where the Phillies were the Phillies had the Rangers send salary back so they wouldn't go over the luxury tax.
That happened. $4 million to
go
along with it.
Yes, it did.
Which makes getting Hans Krauss in that deal even weirder.
Yeah.
The fact that the Rangers ate money and gave them Hans Krauss.
I will point out, though, that while the Mets did get Javi Baez, they missed out on Kenta Maeda because Sandy Alderson is unable to remember that he plays, He works for a team that is owned by a man who's worth $16 billion.
Yeah, they've also forgot to sign their top draft pick.
That's a whole horrible thing with his medicals and them just screwing poor Kumar Rocker right over.
When we have more time, let's dive into that, because that is a story and a half. For me, I think one of the teams that we don't are not really one of the teams that nobody's been talking about all year, and they've had the best record in baseball all year. The Giants adding Chris Bryant.
That's also kind of flew under the radar. We're not talking about it for a reason.
Perfect
acquisition.
I know.
It just was. I mean, for what that team has, and he's off to a red hot start. He's got three homers in his last five games coming into Monday. So he's red hot. The Giants helped themselves tremendously getting another big piece there. I agree, of course, that the Dodgers helped themselves out tremendously getting those two guys. And I think the A's. I think the A's in an American League wild card picture that's still pretty up for grabs. Getting Yan Gomes and Josh Harrison from the Nats. Those are two very good players, guys that can really help him. And getting Starlin Marte from Miami. That's a star center fielder. I think the A's really helped themselves on offense to kind of stay in the mix in the American League West and in the American League wild card picture. For me, as far as a buyer who didn't quite measure up, I gotta say the Padres fell short. You know, I mean, I don't think it was because they were trying to be cheap or they were trying to pinch pennies or anything like that, because I don't think they didn't want to be aggressive. It just kind of didn't work out. And they fell short on Max Scherzer and didn't really do anything else other than get Jake Marisnyk and Daniel Hudson at the trade deadline. Now, they're still really, really good, but, you know, and they're probably going to win the wild card and they're going to get that one game playoff. But missing out on Max Scherzer was a huge blow. So I think the contender that probably missed the mark the most was the Padres, and not necessarily because they did anything wrong, just because of the way the cards fell. Were there any buyers that you thought had a rough trade deadline?
I was surprised that the Cardinals did anything, because they are pretty much the Phillies this year.
Yeah, they're almost exactly like the Phillies
exactly.
this year.
They're
right.
in a division where the Reds are, they've got like a three-game lead, and Milwaukee is, you know, walking away with it. Like, I was surprised. Like, of course, it was John Lester and Jay Happ, mm-hmm. who is mm-hmm. not good right now.
No, not anymore.
He's not good. So I was surprised. I mean, maybe they just need someone, and the Cubs were literally just giving away players, just giving away all their players. No one plays for the Cubs anymore. The Cubs and the Nationals, there are no players left.
I looked at that depth chart the other day. I recognized, like, Ian Snell. I think.
Oh boy,
that was a name. Oh, is that who I'm thinking of? Ian Happ.
Ian Happ.
That's what it
Ian
was.
Happ?
I knew
Same
it was the
reaction.
Name of another player. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just like, I wonder who is
Ian
still
made a comeback. Yeah.
I wonder who is still here. And it's not pretty over there. The thing about the Padres is, man, when the report was out that, like, oh, they're close on Scherzer, it was just like, man, this is going to be the deepest rotation of all time. But, the fact that they couldn't make that work. I mean, they did get Adam Frazier before the trade deadline as well. Like, that was also a get for them. So, like, they're a deep team. They're a deep, good team. Like, it's a shame that them and the Dodgers and the Giants are all in the same division because, they're not all going to get the postseason exposure that they probably deserve. Yeah, but it was disappointing that, like, Daniel Hudson is probably, like, the biggest name that the Padres managed to acquire at the trade deadline. I don't know. I mean, I still think that's the division to watch, you know? I'm kind of entertained by the Yankees going all in on just, like,
lefty power bats
boys like to yes. hit the crap out of the ball out of Yankee Stadium.
Stromboli eating Italian boys.
I still, you know, when a player who was famous for being on one team goes to the Yankees, I still have, like, you know, a shudder of disgust seeing them, regardless of where they came from, in a Yankees uniform. It's like they've been swallowed by a giant monster and spit back out. But it is wild that you have Judge, Stanton, Rizzo, and Gallo all in the same lineup. Yeah. Of course, you know, there was a time when I thought having Trout, Pujols, and Josh Hamilton all in the same lineup was going to, you know, create a generationally talented team. And that didn't happen. So, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I will say this was one of the most memorable and entertaining trade deadlines in a long time. This was a popcorn day for baseball. And that was before any games got played. And that was a good thing. That was great.
Yeah, it would be great if free agency was like the trade deadline. That would be a lot of fun. And by the way, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the White Sox picking up Craig Kimbrell. Give them perhaps the best bullpen in baseball to go along with a supremely talented team.
And who else did the White Sox pick up?
Cesar Hernandez.
Our friend Cesar Hernandez. I hate that. Don't do that. I'm so sick of that meme. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
So real quick, do you think, given that you were just talking about the National League West, can the Giants hold on? Do you think the Giants hold off the Dodgers and the Padres in the National League West at this point? Because as they enter play on Monday, they still have a 3-game lead over the Dodgers and a 6.5-game lead over the Padres.
Let me tell you this. It is in your best emotional interest to assume that they will. Because if you're the last person to be saying, no, they'll implode, and there's a week left in the season, it's going to feel a lot worse when you get sucked down a toilet.
Yeah, you're so, going to be wrong.
Assume that they are going to win the World Series, like me, because it's just at that point. Guys, it's August. They're still up there. They didn't come down. Nothing brought them down. And you know what they did at the trade deadline? They acquired a great player who they can lock up forever, who has already said, like, oh, I want to be here forever. My son points at the Giants logo and says, Dad, like, this is a deal made in heaven. He's a hyper-talented guy who can play multiple positions for a team that is capitalizing on an aging core that is managing to stay healthy enough to be really talented and do what they, you know, did when they were younger and hadn't been hurt as much.
A decade ago!
Buster Posey was the starting catcher at the All-Star game before he sat out. Like, this is a team that's functioning on all levels, and now they have Chris Bryant. They didn't have to be the Dodgers. They didn't have to go like, well, I guess let's dig up some more gold and, you know, pay more players and go a little further over the luxury tax. I don't care about that. I'm just saying the Dodgers just add, like, in waves. They just add. It felt like every player in baseball was going to be on the Dodgers at one point. The Giants were just like, we'll take that guy. And it was one of the best guys you could get, and they got him, and it was the only thing they did, and all they did was get better. So assume the Giants are going to win the World Series, because this is one of those years where you should assume the worst things in the world are going to happen to you because you are a fan of the Philadelphia Phillies.
I was just going to say the same thing, Jess. I was going to say the two teams that I do not want to win the World Series are the Giants and the Astros, and that's how I know they're going to be facing off in the World Series. That's how I know.
That's all fair.
When this happens, I will not be held responsible for the things I say.
I'll have the beeper ready to go, Gabe, on that episode of the podcast.
Gabe Kapler. I can't.
Oh my.
In world, it's happening. The year after leaving here.
It's happening.
Guys, he's a 46-year-old man who wears ripped jeans. Like, come on.
It was two years ago. I forget the 2020 happened.
That's fantastic. All right, well, listen, let's wrap up on that pleasant note here. Let's do some final thoughts. Justin, any more fun-filled final thoughts from you? I mean, we could leave on the Gabe Kapler thing, but anything you want to add at the end here?
Look, this is baseball. It goes on forever. There's two more months of this season, and that means two more months of watching the Phillies. The moves, and I feel like I've said this a couple of times, but I'm going to stick by it. I you know, as angry and disgusted as I am with this franchise this season, and I've lost a lot of respect for this franchise this season, and I don't know exactly, like, the level of respect I've lost for them. I don't know exactly how this team gains it back on like a deep level. On the surface, winning obviously helps. It doesn't fix everything on the level I'm talking about, but it does help. It helps me feel better about the team that, as we were saying, I think before we were even recording, that this is our team, and that means I will be either disgusted or crazy about them, as Liz so eloquently put. I'm sorry, I'm stealing that, but that is an accurate way to portray this. I will always feel something about them, and it will always be strong. My point is that you don't hire Dave Dombrowski to sit around for one season and then what? Go to sleep, leave the organization. No, like, he's here to do more things after this. I'm as sick of waiting as anyone else. We have been all waiting way too long. This is nonsense. There's been a lot of mistakes. The organization has looked massively dysfunctional at times. The organization has looked massively stupid at times, from top to bottom. But they have Dave Dombrowski here for a reason. if they have to do another light reset over what they thought was going to work, okay. But I'm just saying he's not here to do kind of nothing 1 year.
Yeah.
He is going to be more aggressive down the line. Down the line isn't when I want the Phillies to succeed. I want them to succeed today. That's not going to happen. So down the line is the best we got. And I'm not, like, excited for that. I'm not, like, joyful that we are basically being told, well, you got to wait. But I do think in the larger picture, the Phillies won't be out of the conversation forever. I don't think this is indicative of a longer-term surrender. Let's go with that. Failure might come whether they're trying or not. It's not a surrender. I will go. But that's the disgusting part to me is that it is a surrender for 2021. And we're going to watch the Phillies get slapped around for the next 2 months in one of the most winnable divisions in sports. And that is stupid. That is really stupid. And it sucks that we're at this point. And I think all the players should get vaccinated.
Strong agree.
Couldn't agree more. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
I would like to take a minute and talk about Freddy Galvis. One of my all-time favorite Phillies players, despite him not really doing anything of note while he was here, not being very good, except at defense, and then leaving, I think he was traded. I would just like to say he's the only connection we have to the Phillies that were. He was on the team the year after.
He knew Chase Utley.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He debuted in 2012, and he was on the team with all of them. He is the only person left, aside from Cole Hamels, who isn't even playing in Major League Baseball right now. He's really the only one left that has that type of memory. And that is the only reason why. I mean, I'm glad he's back because he's very good at defense. But really, I'm glad he's back because he represents something that we cannot, that just cannot be bottled again, that we cannot grasp or clutch. And it's just nice to see his face in the dugout again, being himself, just being excited and being fun, bringing some levity to this dugout and this clubhouse, which I think probably desperately needs some fun.
Yeah.
Hey,
no doubt.
You mentioned Freddy Galvis being traded. Remember who he was traded for? Yel De Los Santos, who has recorded a 6.75 ERA in 16 innings across the this year. Don't worry, guys.
Full circle.
He was just recalled back to the Phillies today.
Fantastic. The Phillies are good at baseball, guys.
Full circle. Full circle. Just fantastic. Well, listen, folks. That's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for joining me on the podcast once again. Don't forget, folks, to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/hittin'season and finding all the good stuff we have for you there. And tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.